Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Welcome to the Daily Jungle. Hey, Hood, what day is it?
Today's Friday.
You know it. So I hope you denimed up and backed it in and finished the week strong. The Tom Brady hand watch is on. The Hood does not want to talk about it. TB12 doesn't want to talk about it. So we really have no idea exactly what we're dealing with. We talked about that all show long. Former Oklahoma State quarterback Mason Rudolph was in studio today. Hall of Famer Kurt Warner broke down championship weekend. And SI's Jenny Vrentis broke down the bromance between the Hood and the Nictator. We had that and Alvy's week that was. The Daily Jungle starts right now. Brady Handwatch 2018. Here are the latest updates regarding Tom Brady and his hand. Update number one, he was at practice yesterday. I mean, yes, great news, right, Pats fans? He was at practice. Great news. He was wearing gloves on both hands. All right, not so great news. Pats fans, you know this guy hates gloves. He was listed by the team as not practicing yesterday. On the Thursday before the conference championship game, that's flat out bad news, Pats fans. And then on top of that, the Vegas line has already moved in the other direction and is going to move once again if and when the team announces that he can't go. And if he can't go, then Brian Hoyer goes. And Brian Hoyer somehow has conveniently forgotten that he's Brian Hoyer, which we'll get to in a minute. But in terms of Tom Brady, you see, this is exactly the risk you run when you go all in with Tom Brady. Now, I know this is a really different cat. Really different in how he prepares, different in how he obsesses over his mind and his body both. Just as I know how well he's still playing and how quickly he gets it out and how clean his offensive line keeps him. I know all of that. I'm well aware of all that. I'll tell you what else I know. That he's a 40-year-old dude and was never at any point in his life mobile or agile. Hell, he couldn't get out of the way of his own practice teammate. Now, I know every quarterback also gets hit. We know that. So this is the risk that you run in acquiescing to him and trading his backup. Trading Jimmy Garoppolo and having only Brian Hoyer on the roster in the event that something bad does happen. Because it looks like something bad has happened. So now what? Now we wait. Listen, maybe the Patriots are just being very careful. Maybe they had him skip media sessions because they didn't want this thing to become an even bigger circus than it already was. Or maybe it really is bad. I mean, who knows? It's all speculation right now. None of us are going to know until this guy hits the field on Sunday and he tries to spin it. But we do know this. We know this much. Giving up Jimmy Garoppolo for a second-round pick looked bad then, and it looks a hell of a lot worse right now. Should have held on to that guy. Should have held on to him, and you should have been prepared for this very thing. Always prepare for the worst-case scenario. Because this is that, and they weren't prepared. Which is ironic because this is the one NFL franchise that is always prepared for anything and everything except this. In other words, Patriot fans, how do you feel about this? Do you think he's going to go? Do you know he's going to go? Look, this guy doesn't miss playoff games. We know he's going to be out there. Except how close to 100% is he going to be? And then what happens if he takes a shot? What happens if the injury gets aggravated? Then what are you left with? In other words, what is your grip factor right now, Patriot fan? How concerned are you? Because without him, you have Brian Hoyer. Now, Hoyer is running his backup quarterback playbook to perfection. Hoyer says he gets himself ready to play every week regardless. Quote, so whether I'm getting the reps or not, I'm always preparing to play because the truth of reality is you never know when your name is going to be called. If I don't play, it's good for our team. If I do, then I'm ready to go. End quote. Well, you're right about one thing, Brian. If you don't play, it is good for your team. Hey, look, I can respect keeping himself ready because you never know when your number is going to be called. But your mental football is not going to get you ready to play real football. Not on that stage and not against that Jags defense. All the mental reps in the world are not going to make you Tom Brady. All the real reps in the world are not going to make you Tom Brady. You're Brian Hoyer, and that's not a great thing. And then again, we all do play the hand we're dealt. It's not your fault you're Brian Hoyer. It's their fault they're putting you in this position. potentially. It's their fault. They didn't find a way to keep Jimmy Garoppolo. You see, trading Jimmy G for a second-round pick was a bad idea at that time. And now it's looking downright horrible. And yes, the second-round pick next year is better than that compensatory third-rounder a year later. But isn't that the whole point of buying insurance? We all hate to buy insurance. You're probably never actually going to need it. But on the off chance that there is an earthquake or a fire or a teammate runs into your best player ever, at least then you're covered. And they would have been if they had held on to Garoppolo, even if it meant letting him walk at the end of the season. Yeah, I know. They really love those second round picks. Of course. But not as much as they love those. And the fact that they didn't swallow hard and pay for that insurance could end up costing them another ring. You see, they pushed every chip to the center of the table, they rolled the dice, and they may have just crapped out. We'll find out. 1-800-636-8686. Or maybe it's much ado about nothing at all, and they're just being very conservative and very cautious. Or maybe there's a reason they're getting him ready. Hoyer, I mean. Where do you come out on this? If they can't go with Tom Brady, who are you taking? Or if they go with Brady and he's not 100%, who are you taking? And if you know the kind of pressure Jacksonville can get rushing the quarterback with only four guys playing their base defense, how concerned are you? Things just got a hell of a lot more interesting. And of course, Bill Belichick went in front of the media today. There is the hoodie update. Didn't say a hell of a lot, as you might imagine. So lots more to this story, and we will track it and we will follow it. Of course, I'm speaking of Kurt Warner. Kurt, so good to have you back. How are you?
I'm good, Romy. How are you?
Good. Kurt, good to visit. And thank you for making time for the show once again. So I just mentioned that we've been talking about Tom Brady all morning. So what was your reaction? As a quarterback, what do you think when you hear about him jamming his throwing hand?
Well, I mean, first is, you know, jamming something, you know, what does that exactly mean? You know, does that just mean it's sore? Does that mean it's swollen? You know, and that to me is the bigger question. If there's swelling in the hand, that concerns me because the swelling takes away strength, and strength when you're throwing a football, but when you're throwing a football in cold weather is vital to having success. So that was the first thing. And so it's so hard to read into what exactly it is because I don't know if I've ever heard banging into. Now, I've heard of quarterbacks throwing a football and banging their hand on a helmet, and that could be bad. I've broken a finger that way. But it's really just what's the extent of it and what's the majority of the injury? Is it a cut? Is it just sore? Is it swollen? That'll be the real test. And I don't know if we're going to get a chance to see it before he plays or if it's just going to be how he reacts. I know he had the glove on it yesterday, which is another interesting thing. Obviously, I played with gloves later in my career, but didn't early on and tried them early on when I was just experimenting with them. Didn't like them because it changed the feel I had on the football. Didn't feel like I had the same feel where I could throw and control it the same way. So does Tom play with a glove? Is he used to playing with a glove? Does he practice with a glove even though he doesn't play in games? So there's a lot of scenarios here of how this is going to play out and what exactly the injury is. So right now, knowing that he practiced today, I'm not really concerned about it, that if he was practicing and out there throwing it, I think he's going to be fine on Sunday. You know, but until I know the extent of the injury, it's really hard to speculate on what could be the issues.
Kurt, this is why I call you. Kurt Warner joining us on the show. All right, so one more thought, and we don't know exactly what it is, and it's hard for us to speculate. But Kurt, if you were Tom Brady, what would you be doing between now and Sunday to get that hand ready for Sunday?
Again, if it's swelling, that would be the main thing. You know, if it's sore, I think he's going to be just fine. If there's a cut on it, no big deal. But if there's swelling in it, that's what you would try to attack because that swelling, you know, leads to less movement and less strength, and that's where balls get away from you. And as I said, cold, the balls get hard, they get slick. So that would be the most important thing to me is to make sure whether it was massages or whether it was icing it, wrapping it, making sure I get as much swelling out of there as possible so So I have, you know, I have maximum strength come Sunday.
I need 1 second, Clones, to talk to you about something I like very much, Stamps.com. Now, here's a New Year's resolution that you can actually keep. Add Stamps.com to your business and save a ton of time and money this year. Now, I'm going to be very honest with you. I don't need that resolution this year because I've already done it, and I wish I had done it sooner. Stamps.com has saved me so much time and so much money. You see, Stamps.com brings all the amazing services of the U.S. Postal Service right to your computer. Stamps.com is the better way to get postage. You simply use your computer to print U.S. postage for any letter or package, any class of mail, and you let the mailman pick it up. You don't leave your office. There's no more lugging mail to the post office. There is no more hassle. So Stamps.com saves you time and money. Almost everything you can do at the post office, you can do right from your desk. Stamps.com. Convenient, easy, reliable, efficient. And those are all the reasons why I use Stamps.com. And right now, you too can enjoy the Stamps.com service with a special offer that includes a 4-week trial plus postage and a digital scale. Are you ready for a happier new year? Then go to Stamps.com. Hit the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in jungle. That's Stamps.com. Enter jungle. Once again, to take advantage of this great offer, Stamps.com. Enter jungle. That's Stamps.com. Now it's back to our daily jungle. We're talking to Kurt Warner. All right, so on the other side, Kurt, if you're Jacksonville and you've got a shot at that hand, are you taking it? In other words, is that dirty pool, or when there's a trip to the Super Bowl on the line, is everything fair game?
I mean, it's such a hard question because I don't think you ever go out of your way to try to attack someone physically or hit someone physically where they may be sore, where they may, even if you know that that's out there. But at the same time, without question, if you know someone is injured, you attack them. You know, if you know that a corner has an ankle issue, you know, you don't go step on his ankle, but you run at him and you make sure that, you know, that he can plant and do the things that he needs to do. If a quarterback's banged up, you sure as heck want to go hit him. You want to make sure that they're not comfortable, that they're thinking about you and they're thinking about the hand, and you want them thinking about everything but what they're supposed to be doing on a particular play. So I don't think there's ever a place to go and attack somebody's injury and you know, and try to hit them there in hopes that you can knock them out or hurt them more. That there's no place in the game for that. But yeah, it's like there's blood in the water. That you're going to go after a guy when you know that there's a weakness there to exploit that weakness in your benefit. And so, yeah, without a question, you do that as a player.
Hall of Famer Kurt Warner joins us. Now, earlier this week, you tweeted in part, quote, "Watching the Jags right now, wish I could have had the challenge of playing against them, really good and fast, but have lots of ideas," end quote. So what types of ideas do you have when you watch them, and where do you think they might be vulnerable?
Well, I mean, I think the thing is that, you know, we make such a huge deal of the two corners, and the two corners are great players. Both of them in their own right would probably be number ones anywhere else. But we get so hung up with that, and are they going to be able to attack them and beat the corners? Are they going to have success against this defense because those corners are so good? Well, when I look at New England, they're not built on their wide receivers, you know, winning on the outside one-on-one. You know, that's not the way that their offense works. You know, they don't have the dynamic players like the Antonio Brown where, you know, Big Ben did throw at those guys in one-on-one, and his guy made the play when their guy didn't. I'm not sure New England is built that way or is even going to try to attack them on the outside one-on-one very often. They're going to attack them inside, in my opinion. They're going to attack them with their backs. They're going to try to get matchups on the linebackers. They're going to go high and low with Gronk and the running backs, or, you know, in the past they've been great with their two tight ends. Haven't used two tight ends as much this year, but that to me is where you attack this team. You don't say, hey, we're going to attack their strength because they're too good. You take your shots, you pick your moments, but you attack them interiorly and make sure that those linebackers and safeties can cover. And, you know, if you look at some of the big plays that they got last week outside of the throws that they made to Antonio in one-on-one situations, they attacked him inside. Martavis Bryant caught the touchdown pass at the end of the first half, inside attacking the safeties. They attacked him with the tight ends, and Le'Veon Bell had a number of catches inside, and they had success. So I think that's where you attack them first, And then you take your moments and pick your moments to attack them outside.
We're talking to Kurt Warner. Kurt, before you go, what about the NFC? Knowing the work that you put in, knowing what it takes to be a quarterback in that league and how hard you have to battle and fight and grind to keep that dream alive, what do you think, for instance, when you see guys like Case Keenum and Nick Foles, who've been with a number of teams over the last few years but have led their teams to the national or to the conference championships and are now 60 minutes away from playing for the ultimate prize?
I know. I love it. You know, and that's what you love about this business is you can't write these scripts any better. That one of these guys that was a backup on the Rams a couple years ago when they were together is going to be playing in the Super Bowl. Both of them are playing each other for an opportunity to be there. You know, and I can relate to both of them. You got a Nick Foles who came into the league and had that 27 touchdowns, 2 interception year, and you're like, oh my gosh, where did this guy come from? Yeah, unbelievable year, and then all of a sudden he disappears and everybody kind of thinks he can't play. I was there where I played really well, and then I went through a stretch where, he can't play, and I was able to find myself back where Nick is now. So I'm excited about that part of it. He's showing people that, you know, just because Carson went down, that this team can still win, and he could be a catalyst for that. And then you have Case on the other side where I think a lot of people thought, well, he can't play. You know, they got no chance now that Case is running the show. And he's been spectacular this year. So I'm just excited for both of these guys. I'm excited that we're going to get a new guy in the Super Bowl. That I love the fact that, you know, I think every quarterback and every player really, but every quarterback should have the opportunity to play in a Super Bowl. So I'm always cheering for the new guys to get that experience because you know how hard it is and how many times guys go one time and never get back. So I'm excited to watch this play out, and I'm going to be excited for either one of those guys that advance on because it's going to be a great storyline Super Bowl week.
Do you have any update on status for Sunday?
Yeah, we gave out the injury report yesterday. We'll update it today.
Now that Tom's dealing with this injury, looking back on the season, do you have any regrets about trading away Jimmy Garoppolo?
We're getting ready for Jacksonville.
Looking like Tom might be a game-time decision.
Today's Friday.
I mean, did you expect anything different? Did you really expect anything different from this guy? Ask the hood about the virtues of Blake Bortles, and he'll pull out a PowerPoint, and he'll go to town with that demonstration. Hell, he basically did as much earlier this week when he was pimping Bortles' rushing average, his efficient throwing, his size. Ask him anything about that guy, and then he'll give you whatever he wants. Ask him about his quarterback, though, and you're going to get a death stare, and at best, maybe a grumble or two before a throat clear. Hell, I'll be straight. That was actually a little bit more than I was expecting. Hell, I'll be straight. That was way more than I was expecting. That was downright helpful. That was a nice reminder that the team is going to update the injury report later on today. That the Jaguars are the team that they're playing in the AFC Championship game on Sunday. And in case you forgot, today is Friday.
Today's Friday.
Thanks, Hood. Thanks a lot. I mean, the fact that he even gave us that today is Friday, that's a hell of a lot more than I expected from him. Thank you very much, Hood. Now, can I ask you about Jimmy Garoppolo?
Today's Friday.
All right, how about Jacoby Brissett? Were those 12 catches for 194 yards from Philip Dorsett worth that?
Today's Friday.
All right, fine. How about this? How do you feel about having to actually go to battle with Brian Hoyer?
Jesus Christ.
Bottom line, considering the circumstances, the AFC Championship is up for grabs. A sixth ring is up for grabs. Your 40-year-old franchise quarterback with a hand injury that is the talk of the entire football world is very much in question. And these guys are out there, the reporters, just working it. And they feel like they got the scoop of a lifetime because they got the hood to tell them that it's Friday.
Today's Friday.
Today's Friday is more than I expected.
Today's Friday.
Friday is like a gem. Today's Friday is like, oh, damn, I can't believe they got me to say that. They got me to say today is Friday.
Today's Friday.
And tomorrow's Saturday. So, no, he's not going to tell you anything at all, which is my point. We're not going to know. Unless you're in that building, unless you're one of the physicians, we're not going to know. None of us are going to know what's going to happen until that guy hits the field on Sunday and we try to see him spin it. He'll hit the field on Sunday. We know he's going to play. This guy does not miss playoff games, and Until this point, he does not lose to the Jaguars. He's 7-0 against Jacksonville. But these Jags are not the same as those Jags. Mason Rudolph is in studio. Mason, what's up? How are you?
How you doing? Thanks for having me.
Good, man. How are you? How are things?
Great. Doing well. Just been out here in California, Southern California, couple of weeks so far. And just been enjoying the weather and working out, getting ready. And, you know, I leave for the Senior Bowl this Sunday, even though I won't be, you know, playing in it or practicing. I'm still going to go down for interviews and kind of, you know, soak in the whole experience. So I'm excited.
All right, so there's our first newsworthy item. You're not going to play in that game.
Yeah.
You're walking around in a boot still.
Yep.
How long are you going to be in that boot, and what is your physical status?
Yeah, so we did a checkup at USC about 2 weeks ago. Was having some soreness after the bowl game. I knew I had done something, but I didn't think it was a break or anything to the extent of that. But and it wasn't. It was just a foot sprain. And so kind of spoke with Dr. Anderson, the NFL kind of specialist for the foot side of things, and he recommended I wouldn't play in the game and just kind of, you know, I wouldn't be 100%. So why risk an injury? And but you know, I'll only be in the boot for another week, and then kind of be ready to go for the combine, be 100%.
You know, guys do skip their bowl games, and hindsight's 20/20. Yeah. Looking back, is it something maybe you shouldn't have done, or are you glad you did it?
You know, I'm a team guy. We wanted to win the game. We wanted to, you know, go three straight seasons with 10 win seasons, and you know, we accomplished that goal, and so I don't think, no regrets. I think I went with my gut and wanted to be with my team, my teammates for one more game, and you know, freak things can happen, you know, any day of your life. So this won't be a big issue at all. Rehab it, you know, be back out of the boot in a week and be ready to go.
So ready for the combine? Can you participate in everything relating to the combine?
Everything, yeah, I'll be good.
Okay, so you had this amazing college career. Now you're a few months off. You're here in Southern California. You've got your process. You've got your regimen. If you could do it, would you push a button and fast forward, or do you find yourself enjoying the process?
I do enjoy it. I mean, I think every single day, you know, you can learn something new, and just the guys you meet through this whole process. Whether it's an old football coach, an old football mind that you can kind of, you know, garner some knowledge from about the game, and just the daily kind of film review and X's and O's on the board with my quarterback coach, Zach Robinson, it's been helpful and just enjoying the process and looking forward to the Senior Bowl. Like I said, even though I won't be able to perform, but just taking it day by day and just trying to maximize, you know, every single day. That's my ability.
See, the thing is, you sound the part, you look the part. I'm talking about the part of quarterback, but you were not always a quarterback. I mean, you go back to Northwestern High School in Rock Hill, South Carolina. You put up huge numbers, but you did so as a tight end.
Yeah.
What were you like as a tight end, and then how did you transition to quarterback?
Yeah, I was actually a tight end receiver kind of
hybrid. All right.
And if you can believe that, my freshman year of high school at a private Christian school, once I transferred over to Northwestern High School, the public, I was a quarterback the whole way. So started there sophomore through senior year, and was blessed to have a unbelievable head coach and Coach Kyle Richardson, who's now an analyst at Clemson with my brother there. And so it was a great experience, man. But I was glad I definitely made the switch, and it was the long-term position for me for
looking
sure.
At, you mentioned Clemson. Now, for instance, your father played at North Carolina, and your father said the toughest thing about picking a Big 12 school would be the fact that it wouldn't be as cool as picking an ACC school or an SEC school when you're growing up in ACC and SEC country. Was that a concern for you, and how'd you end up where you ended up?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't really care, you know, what people thought of the cool factor at all. I mean, obviously, LSU was the first to offer, kind of trying to take me out of the Southeast, and I had a great relationship with Coach Miles and that staff, but at the end of the day, I didn't want to hand the ball off to, you know, Leonard Fournette. I wanted to throw the ball around at Oklahoma State and playing an explosive offense with Coach Gundy and Coach Yurcich, and so that was the decision I made. I felt like it was the best, you know, kind of gateway to the NFL, and so I was obviously happy with my decision and all the memories and all the experiences I've had and all the big victories But I'm excited for the next step.
All right, so you arrive on campus, and you thought maybe you might redshirt that freshman year, but then you make your debut late in the season against Baylor.
Yep.
What do you remember about that game?
Yeah, so Baylor was I think it was a top three team going to that game, you know, on the road on their place night game. So definitely was a little bit nervous going in, and you know, just kind of you always wonder about how your game's going to translate to the college level. And I think once you get that first completion, man, that's all I remember was just get that first completion down and getting into the flow of the game, and then just kind of feeling the game out. And even though we lost, I feel like I kind of provided a spark to the offense, and I think that kind of rolled into the next week when we beat Oklahoma.
Yeah, see, that's an amazing thing, because then a couple of weeks later, you've got number 20 Oklahoma, and you win that game in overtime. What was your first taste of Bedlam like? And for those who have not been in the middle of that, none of us have, what's it like to be in the middle of that thing?
Yeah, it's, I think it's it's a bigger rivalry the last 5 years than even the Red River rivalry with Texas and OU. I think Oklahoma State, OU, it's come down the Big 12 championship between those teams the last 5 years, and other than this past year, but it was an awesome experience being from the Southeast. You know, I didn't know much, you know, other than kind of the Clemson South Carolina rivalry. So sure. It was new to me, and I think I got accustomed to it quick, and it was fun, you know, beating those guys my first go around.
Mason Rudolph joining me in studio for a few more moments, getting ready for the NFL draft. You know, we talked about the bowl game. You got hurt, but you go 21 for 32, 351 yards, a couple of touchdowns in that win over Virginia Tech in the Camping World Bowl. So what did it mean to end your career on a note like that and to go out with a win?
Yeah, it's the reason I played the game. I think, you know, there's a couple, you know, along with James Washington and Marcel Aitman, a couple of guys that, you know, had the option to kind of sit it out, and we decided to go for it and wanted to end on a high note and kind of soak up the last time in an Oklahoma State, you know, jersey with our teammates. And I think it was the right call. And it was fun to go out and to beat a good Bud Foster defense in Virginia Tech and a good opponent.
I'm glad you mentioned James Washington. This is a guy, it seems like the two of you have amazing chemistry on the field. So, number one, what's it like to play with him? And then number two, when you have a guy who's that gifted physically, I mean, there's a 50-50 ball, but I would imagine you throw a ball up to that guy, 70-30. It's more like 70-30, yeah, right, or 80-20. Sure. What about that chemistry and what's it like to play with him?
Yeah, he's a tremendous dude, great friend off the field, but unbelievable athlete. Just the way he can, you know, high point balls, his speed, his run after catch ability. It's second to none in the college level, and a guy that was so under recruited out of high school. Like he had a Texas Tech offer, and he was committed to Texas State for a while. So it's like way under the radar guy.
Incredible.
You know, just came in, and from the first day in fall camp, you knew he was a special player, and he kept working every single year, and it was a great ride with him. A lot of explosive down the field shots. You know, those are the ones that stick out between me and James, but a guy that I'm excited to go through this whole process with.
You know, guys like that, I mean, sometimes when somebody tells you you're not good enough or you're not big enough or you're not strong enough, sometimes people think like maybe they're right, I'm not, and then other guys use that as a chip and fuel, and it stays with them. Let me ask you this. Go back a few months to October and that moment at homecoming and hoops before the Baylor game. Yeah. You and Mike Gundy are on the court. Yeah. Both you guys are shirtless on the court. Exactly what happened and what's going through your mind in that moment?
Yeah, so Coach Gundy showed up a little late to that whole pep rally, and I was supposed to talk, just say a couple words and pass the mic to Gundy, but he took over the show, man, and I think he said that it was planned, but it was obviously not planned whatsoever. And he,
maybe not by you, bro.
He had been working out a
look
lot.
Look at that down there. maybe not by you. It wasn't planned.
No, not by me.
All right, so he'd been working out.
I tried to throw it on as soon as he's getting after it in the weight room. I think he was kind of feeling himself, you know, the way he looked, and so he wanted to show it off. But no, that's the guy he is. He's a fun dude. He's an unbelievable personality and a guy to go to work with. Played quarterback at Oklahoma State, so a lot of wisdom, a lot of experience there.
You know, I'm glad you answered that, because I was going to say he's one of my favorite guys, obviously, as I'm a media guy, and you talked about what it's like to play for him. You know, it'd be so easy to get caught up in the mullet or the shirt or anything else, but this guy's a damn good coach.
Yeah.
He knows what to do. He played the position. What did you learn about playing quarterback from him?
I'd say toughness is the biggest thing. Mm. Toughness and carrying out my play fakes. He's a big stickler on naked fakes and making sure you're doing the little detail things to keep the team rolling. But yeah, toughness. I mean, he played through a whole lot of injuries in his career, was an unbelievable player, had a lot of the school records before Brandon Whedon came through. But unbelievable coach, just very influential in my life, a kind of a father figure in Oklahoma away from home, and a guy that I'll stay in touch with, you know, forever.
Well, so now that you're officially away from the program, you can shoot me straight. You can be honest. Yeah. What did you really think of the mullet?
man, it was great. I think the first time I saw it, we were going on to Big 12 Media Days in Dallas, and he hadn't gotten a haircut in a while. I was like, is this like just kind of a lack of a haircut, or is he trying to do something here with that? And so he kept it rolling, man, and it caught fire. And I think he just said, you know, we're gonna roll with it, and the players embraced it, and I think obviously you guys in the media did too. So it was a good deal for Oklahoma State and for him, and he still got it. So I we'll see when he kind of puts that to bed.
He still got it, and he gets it. This guy gets it.
He's got the flow for sure.
Listen, one last thing. He was always preaching toughness, be tough. Yeah. But then again, that's something that's been hammered into you since day one. I mean, you've got it in your family. Yeah. Your dad played the game. As the quarterback, as the leader, as the guy who leads from the front and the guy that everybody's looking at, you're going to do whatever you can to get yourself out there on the field. But sometimes it's tough to make the right decision because it's so ingrained in you. I got to play through it. They're counting on me. How do you make that decision?
Yeah, I think, if it's a huge injury, obviously the medical staff will tell you and give you guidance on, hey, this is time to sit this one out. But, the small injuries that I had over the course of my career, they were all, minor enough to where I could play through them. And even though you kind of had a little, everyone has injuries. It's football. So, I wasn't any special than anyone else, but this is the love for my school and my teammates that I had. I wanted to be on the field every snap I could, and I tried to be there for them and lead my team.
All right, so last thought, I'll put this to you the way I have. Some of the other quarterback prospects who've come through here, you're worried about you. You're worried about your process. Yep. You're not worried about the other guys. Yep. You'll see the other guys. You'll get with them. You'll have some quality time. But as you look at yourself and your game and your tape, how do you put yourself up against the likes of Baker Mayfield or Sam Darnold or Josh Rosen, the best of the best? Are you in that class or are you better than that class?
Oh, I think I'm the best quarterback in this class for sure. I think you look at the tape and you look what I've done over 4 years. The experience I've had, the starts, the ability to push the ball down the field, athletic enough than people, athletic, more athletic than people give me the credit for, get out of situations. But I think I'm a leader first and foremost, and I think Joe Gibbs used to say it, and the way he evaluated quarterbacks was, does the guy get the team down the field? And that's something I do, and I've done it for 4 years, and I'll continue to do that at the next level.
Jenny Vrentis is my guest. Jenny, it's nice to have you back on. How are you?
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. I'm great. How are you doing?
Good. Super. Great to have you on. And I want to talk to you because I think you've got an excellent piece up right now titled Belichick and Saban, the stories behind football's most powerful friendship. Let me first ask you, how did the piece first come about? For example, both these guys are pretty tight-lipped in their pressers. What was it like when each of them starts talking about the other? And then how did that piece come to be?
I heard, through the years, a little bit about their friendship. My boss, Peter King, had mentioned it in passing a few times. And last year, we were doing a road trip to the Super Bowl. We were stopping on a route to Houston at high schools and anyone with ties to the game. We were going right through Tuscaloosa. So I thought, hey, it'd be great to get Nick Saban to talk about Bill Belichick. Obviously, that's the peak of recruiting season, so the timing was not great. So we tried again and ended up meeting with Saban during training camp and then talked to Belichick in November. And then, it was just kind of a process of getting people who had been around them to fill in some of the stories and add some more of the details in. But, it just really stood out talking to both of them was just, this was a topic that they really wanted to talk about because of the respect that they have for each other. That just really came through clearly. I mean, it was interesting to hear Saban, who's obviously at the top of college sports, basically being so deferential to Belichick, saying, learned anything from me through the years. I wouldn't be the coach I am without him. So that respect came through really clearly, and it was interesting to hear both of them just kind of light up when talking about the other one.
Jenny Vrentis joining us. Now, you start the piece also by writing about a meeting that they had at a hotel in West Point, New York about 30 years ago. Saban was the DB coach with the Oilers. Bill Belichick was the Giants defensive coordinator. So what was their connection before that meeting? And then why did they decide to get together for that visit?
It started like so many things in Bill Belichick's coaching career have with his father. Steve Belichick was the longtime scout and assistant coach for Navy football. And in 1982, they had a new assistant DBs coach, Nick Saban. And so Nick Saban and Steve Belichick became close. They would always be around each other on the practice field. I think Steve saw in Nick a lot of the same things he saw in his son, that he was intense, detail-oriented. And so that summer when Bill was home, on a break in the off season, they all had dinner together with Nick and his wife, Bill and his wife, both of Bill's parents, and they kind of hit it off and kept in touch a little bit. And then in 1988, 89, Saban had his first job in the NFL. He was DB's coach, as you mentioned, for the Oilers, and he basically said to Belichick, let's get together sometime and talk some ball. He really wanted to pick his brain on the pro ranks, And Belichick, in turn, understood that Saban had – he knew that he saw the game the same way that he did. But I just really think it all started from his father's respect for Saban. You know, Belichick said anytime his father would say, this guy is a really good coach, he would keep it in his mind. And I think that's what ultimately started the friendship. And then they sort of took it to the next level by spending a weekend together just exchanging ideas on defense.
Jenny Vrenta is joining us. Then they end up together because Belichick was named the head coach in Cleveland. And as you point out, he interviewed 85 potential assistant head coaches, but hiring Saban as D coordinator was the easiest decision. So what was that Brown staff like? And in particular, what was the dynamic like between Belichick and Saban when they began to work together?
That Brown staff, you know, it's been chronicled. It's such an all-star staff. 9 future NFL GMs or head coaches. 3 future head coaches of major college programs. And so there was a lot of talent on that staff, a lot of young rising talent. I think what a lot of people who were there said to me, though, was that, you know, it was always a little bit different. One coach said it was different when Bill and Nick walked into the room. Everyone just kind of went quiet. They knew it was time for business. And so I think that everyone who was around them at that point of time could recognize that they both had that single-mindedness for football, that sort of, you know, never-ending quest to do things better, to get all the details right. And I think, you know, that they found in each other, and I think those around them at the time certainly recognized them. You know, obviously things didn't work out the way they wanted to in Cleveland. There were a lot of factors. You know, ultimately Belichick got fired when the team was moved to Baltimore. But I think that time together in Cleveland when Belichick was trying to build a program, and that influenced both the way he has built the Patriots and the way Saban has built Alabama.
We're talking to Jenny Vrentas. I mean, I could do this for hours with you. It's just such a fascinating thing because everybody is so hungry for both these guys or information about both these guys, and it's almost impossible to get anything about either one of them, and you've got this piece talking about both of them. As an example, there's a great story within the piece from Louis Riddick, who was a safety for the Browns at that time. Earlier in the season, he had been playing as the money linebacker in the dime package. He had blown a few assignments. So how did Saban react to that in the moments after he blew a third down read? And then how did Saban treat him later on?
Right. So as you mentioned, you know, he was in a sub package, and he blew a play, he gave up a big play, came to the sideline. Saban reamed him out. Saban is very fiery, as we all see on the sidelines. That's the difference between him and Belichick. Belichick is more, you know, kind of monotone, deadpan. Saban will yell at people on the sideline. He yelled at Riddick, benched him from the sub package. And this was in the middle of the season. And he said to him, you know what, if you go into the tank, if you, you know, give up and you sulk, you're never getting back on the field. But if you keep working, you'll never know when your chance might be. And as it happened in the final game of the regular season, one of the starting got hurt, and Saban looked at Riddick and said, you're in. And so Riddick ended up starting the 2 playoff games. And so I think, you know, a lot of times we see this happen, right, with Alabama and New England, and on a big stage they need to go to a player who's less experienced, or, you know, they make some kind of personnel change, and you think to yourself, how is that player ready? And I thought that was such a great example of the coaching that goes on, the motivational tactics that they both use to sort of get their players in position whenever they need them, and possibly in some of the biggest moments of the year.
All right, so if both these guys are so good at what they do on their respective levels, and they can really be compared to one another in terms of coaching success, and we know this professionally, but how similar are they as people away from the game?
I think they have a lot of similarities. You know, one thing I didn't mention in the story, but, you know, they're both Croatian, which is something that I think they're both proud of, that they sort of have this shared heritage. And I think, you know, Belichick said that he'd never been to Croatia before Saban said, oh, I went, you have to go. And he's been twice since. So that was interesting. But I do think they're both, you know, certainly they come across at times, you know, Belichick certainly in media conferences is very gruff. But I think when they're around each other, they are comfortable. I mean, I just think that sometimes their personalities, because they're so single-minded, because they're so intense, because they're so focused singularly focused on one thing, and that's, you know, building a successful program, that, you know, they don't often show other sides of each other. But I think around each other, they can kind of let their guard down. And I do think that you know, they may have different defensive styles. They may have slightly different ways of doing things. But I do think there's a lot of like-mindedness between them.
Jenny Vrentas, my guest. So final thought, if both these guys have accomplished everything they have to accomplish on the respective levels, and they have, at this point, what motivates and drives them? I mean, how are they able to avoid complacency at all costs?
I think it's the same thing that drove them to meet with each other at West Point in the late 80s. And that's just, they always feel like there's something more to learn. You know, I think the best people in any business, right, are the ones who never feel like they have it figured out. They always think there's ways to do better. You know, the challenge is still out there. So I think for both of them, understanding how they were as young coaches, I think that has never changed for them. And I think, to me, that's why they keep going, because it's not like they've mastered it, you know. It's not like, okay, I've accomplished everything I have to accomplish. There's still puzzles to solve, problems to solve, new things on the horizon. And so I think to them, that's how they view it.
Welcome to the jungle. What's going on? A very good Monday to you. Hope you had an amazing weekend. It was one of the all-time great NFL weekends. What's up? How you living? The Ink Weekend. Adam Hawk got his tat. And then, of course, above all else, you had this.
Yeah! Oh, my goodness! It's going to go in for the touchdown!
The Minneapolis Miracle. The Skol Mary. The Hail Mary. The Whiff Six. Call it whatever you want. I still have no idea how that happened.
Oh, my God!
I don't care if you're a Vikings fan or not, that's got to make you smile. Unless you're a Saints fan, and then it's a dagger to the heart.
Is that your favorite soundbite on the show?
It's one of my favorites.
John, my man, you jumped ship. That's a grand slam. Now I'm sober. I've had a few cups of coffee. Show it to me live.
All right, here we go.
It's incredible.
You know, caught myself in the mirror and been like, oh, what the hell did I do?
Hey, humor me here. Surf Shack went off at 7-5. I'm watching this race right now.
Surf Shack trying to come with a late
get up, Shack. He's on the outside. He's not going to be good enough.
Surf Shack was sick.
It was all right. Not really.
Twitter.
Did you rip the HD
Stop!
And throw it out the
Kyle!
Window after the race? The Red Vine King of the NBA, Howard.
Always a pleasure. I'm now walking under the Applebee's, which is the obnoxious music coming from it. So sorry about that.
Now that's eating good.
Now we got some
punk. Blake Griffin is a bitch. He's always been a bitch.
Mark in Barstow.
Basketball players are so soft, man. They should change their league name to the No Balls Association.
Ah! The association's fine with the name they have. I love the bump in on television of the XR4TI in the control room. It's like Top Gun. These guys are all sweating bullets. Conditions on the field change, so can your insurance needs.
Man,
Daniel Jeremiah is my guest.
Maybe the greatest read I've ever heard right there that you just polished.
You
off.
Got it, man. Thank you very much. I'm a pro.
I thought they did a good job just getting him comfortable.
I literally have never, I think in 25 years, disconnected a guest in the middle of an answer. Time to go ballistic, man.
We're going ballistic, man.
What's the worst that could happen if I go to Rex in Albuquerque?
The thing is, I won't be getting a tattoo. I'll be getting scrotox injections.
So Rex, I don't know what scrotox is, and I don't want to know. You get ink, you get respect on this program.
I want you to sign my back, and I want to get that tattooed on there as well.
You got it. That's done.
What day should I drive to Minnesota?
Instead of saying what day, say great, Rome. Is Monday or Wednesday better?
Oh, my goodness.
Whoa. What I'm saying is it's all fun and games until one of these punches actually does land. We need to get to the All-Star break stat. Daniel Cormier joining us.
The thought of our kid being at school with her hair being brushed by a dog brush was not pleasant, so she was pissed off.
Tanner Lee joins me in studio. Before I talk to you about your decision and your career, you saw my EP, Adam Hawk. What do you make of a dude who gets ink of his cat?
No, it shows a lot of passion, man. I love that. I mean, guy loves his cat. Can't beat that.
Email
Charlie Weiss Jr. SOC. When your dad is Charlie Weiss, you have some big pants to fill. Here you go, Blaze. I always say to you, give me an A or give me an F.
Jungle caramel you got. Sorry, TV audience. I didn't mean to crack your TV sets with that straight fire.
Josh brings nothing.
Daniil Hunter is my guest.
By the way, I was looking on the clock. I was just like, only thing we could do is just sit there and believe. We just all sat there and watched the looks that we had on our faces, like you guys saw on TV. And then Diggs got his catch, and then we were all just like, wow, that's unbelievable.
So what I want to do is immortalize the XR4TI on my giant boiler, get it around the belly button. So really, it's an homage to the life-changing things that the XR4TI taught me. Don't forget about Matt Mulder.
The following countries that listen to the show. United States, Canada, China, India, United Kingdom, Iran, Germany, Japan, Bangladesh, Australia, Netherlands, Philippines, Republic of Korea, Iraq, Spain, France, Mexico, Saudi Arabia, Italy, Qatar, Brazil.
Jail, it's good to see you in studio.
I'm coming in hot. I came after the host, though, and that's always a bad move.
No, I want to be very clear about this. That's not why you finished where you finished. I mean, you finished where you finished because there were some really good calls that day.
My call, I think my call would have won certain years.
Yeah, but to be fair, Chio, your call it's this hard. Year would not have made you champion any other year.
Is that a compliment to you, or do you worry about the mental acuity of your fans if they're going to put your name on their body?
Yes. Ben Golliver.
You know, as soon as we did that story about the smack-off, I have been hearing from the clothes nonstop for like 6 months, and I don't think they're going away anytime soon.
Banana, bazooka, banana, bazooka, banana, bazooka, 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 banana, banana, bazooka.
Email.
What's the difference between cookie crumbs and Tom Brady's hand? One of them has not been down my shirt. I know you're salty and thirsty.
Sarah, are you a mom? Are you married?
Mason Rudolph is in studio. How do you put yourself up against the best of the best?
I think I'm the best quarterback in this class for sure. You look at the tape and you look what I've done over 4 years.
Let's go to Toledo.
FBI Mike, you still have two more chances to do what you always do. Sit on your own junk like Mr. Belvedere.
Ah! Mike, why do you have to change your voice? Why do you have to change your name?
Lori in Buffalo.
We love watching you and we think it's great.
Racker.
You've got a giant, voluptuous ass. Even Kim Kardashian is jealous of that jaw booty.
I'm not talking about that.
Oh, Romy didn't like my phone call.
I want to hear from somebody who dominates a board
you
game.
You sank my battle.
Austin, look out for that camera.
Many, many experiences.
Pet rat Randy Johnson didn't want any of that. Totally trashed.
Have a good one, Jim. Talk to you soon.
I'm not going to take from anybody.
You need to get your ego on check, buddy.
Flawless victory.
Nova!
Come on.
It's Friday.
Trust the process.
Woo. Good night now.
It's a good week we had. That's a very good week. There it is, clones. You know what day it is.
Today's Friday.
That's right. I'm on a bird to New York City this weekend for the NFL Today. I'll be right back here on Monday to do it once again. Have an amazing weekend. I'm out.